I have no relevant financial relationships. I guess the other thing we're supposed to say is we have a relationship with the VA. So my aim today is to discuss the role of professional virtual communities to bridge the implementation gap between discovery, development, and delivery. And I'm actually really thrilled. Donna Berry, one of my colleagues, is in the conversation with us, who's one of the moderators of one of these communities. I'm hoping she will correct and comment en route. So in about 3 years ago, we began this conversation in this trans-pillar dialogue between Partners in Health, Harvard Medical School, the School of Public Health, and Harvard Business School, looking at the investment that had been made, and quite significant that of, in discovery, the basic science, development, and the new tools. And the Gates Foundation at that point asked us to review their strategy, and we got back to them to say, you have 75 products about to hit market. And then they asked us, great, can you produce product-specific strategies? And our advisor being Paul Farmer, the question was absolutely not. That's not what we thought the gap was. But it was really a codification and understanding of delivery. And this product, this technological pileup, we think actually broadens the implementation gap and increases inequity. So we generated really three notions of what we thought we could do in this trans-pillar relationship and dialogue. The first was to generate new knowledge, and I'll talk a little bit today about how we view knowledge versus information. The second is to train current and future global health leaders. And then third is to innovate and use the academic space to, in a sense, experiment to see what platforms and tools would be useful. And one I'll explore today with you is ghdonline.org. So the dialogue that we had, the difference between information and knowledge, there's others who have written about this, but I thought this quote in particular was important. So as distinct from information, knowledge transcends the experiences of any one individual, embodying the collective experience of practitioners who understand each other's stories, difficulties, and insights. And in many ways, we think this is actually what's missing within the delivery space. We have data, we have clinical trials, we have trials of diagnostics. We understand, in many ways, the waves and trends within the epidemics. So we then did a scan of what was within, what were the root causes of this implementation gap, and we came to five. The first is there's a minimal diffusion of innovation in the space. The second is there's information constraints, which we think is actually a knowledge gap. There's constraints in the funding flows, the structures of incentives, and the management systems for delivery. In the knowledge gap, we saw these are some, and there's many solutions here, and I think many of you may have interfaced with several of these. We've had a long conversation with the group at Hinari, which sits at the WHO, but we saw that there was few and very isolated and quite narrow professional virtual communities. And this space has been explored in other industries. This isn't necessarily a new relationship. But I thought this quote helped identify what we thought PVCs are. So an association of individuals identified by specific knowledge scope with an explicit business orientation aimed at generating value through members' interactions, sharing, and collaboration. And even pre-Facebook and Twitter, many industries have used professional virtual communities. I think we could see how we could redefine this definition for public health. So what we did in July 2008 was launch a prototype. We began with 6 public communities. We now have 8, and on the backside, we have 30 private communities. All the communities are guided by expert moderators. The moderators are from all over the map. And in many ways, we chose to house this across Harvard and Brigham and Women's Hospital so that it was, in a sense, owned or co-owned by one funder. So you'll see, in a sense, there's little branding to that effect. So here's what the... And I hope you guys will tool around with this and get online tonight, so ghdonline.org. And you can see Global Health Nursing and Midwifery, which I know Donna will be speaking at another session tomorrow morning. On the right-hand column, I just wanted to note a few things. We became a beta test site for Google Translate. So there's some issues with the Russian, for example, that we're testing. We were able to convince UpToDate to give us a free subscription, so GHD Online users can apply for a year-long free subscription to UpToDate. And then in the communities, we highlight several of the conversations. But within, you'll see kind of how we utilize the different feeds in a moment. So our membership, this is with no marketing budget. This is the first conference we're really speaking about GHD Online. This has been really word of mouth. 3,600 members, 1,200 organizations, and across 35 countries. Similarly, breadth of membership with respect to roles and professions. And we've been trying to sort out what we've been doing, and this is where we started off, that we thought we strengthen bonds within existing communities, we build bridges between professionals, academics, and policymakers, and there's been a significant amount of research about how innovation happens when bridges are built to collaborate. And then we've leveraged partnerships to democratize essential information. So we go out and actually say, this data set is closed off, or Journal Watch, you're actually a for-profit institution germinating, we think, very important clinical knowledge, and convince them that there's actually a role and responsibility they have to clinicians and implementers in resource-limited settings. So I'll go through three examples. To strengthen bonds. So we began a conversation about the volume of specimens needed for a lab smear. And we had a very quick response of replies, six replies less than 1 week. And then we ended up compiling this information to practical recommendations on lab quality assessment, generated a discussion brief, which was both peer-reviewed and then actually was recently submitted to a journal. But the point was we got the information out in 2 weeks, basically, and it was posted as a discussion brief on GHD Online. The other piece of this conversation I thought was important here, I'm trying to show you kind of the dynamics of the conversation, but even after the discussion folded, one of the implementers asked a follow-up question and then found one of the people who answered at a conference, and the discussion continued on several months later and then was brought up a few months later at a meeting at the WHO. So in the sense, there's a live activism of the discussion itself. It's archived, it's made into a discussion brief, but the conversation continues and is updated. But spend a moment on this. So Donna and I were actually just talking about post-Haiti earthquake from January 12th, and we had several discussions on GHD Online. On the private side, we had a discussion how to assist and place Haiti medical students, which we helped place within the first 120 days to other medical schools. This conversation, which you can see kind of where the posting and when, was related to what data was needed within 24 hours, 72 hours, 1 week, 1 month, as such. And then this was later documented and reviewed from some of the both USAID and Partners in Health folks in Haiti. The third mechanism that we've used GHD Online for on the private side is actually, in a sense, for a form of telemedicine. So about a year ago, we launched a clinical exchange community. We have 500 docs on here, as well as nurses, midwives, and social workers. And we discuss the really hard and difficult patients. So you can see here we posted blood smears, we've reviewed CT scans, skin findings, chest x-rays, urine, spinning down urine, clinical protocols. And we have about even Rwandan docs and nurses and clinicians to Brigham and women's docs. And what has been fascinating is most people are using the site just with their handheld. They aren't even using the web interface. They're texting in questions. And then we're able to catalog these and use them for training both in Rwanda and in Boston. When I spoke a bit about leveraging partnerships, this is a list of those that we've been able to leverage. One I want to highlight is UpToDate. So UpToDate was started by a doc in Boston in his basement, and it's now saturated the American market as one of the most important forms of clinical information. So someone looked and evaluated when I was on the wards at the Brigham that I used UpToDate more frequently than my stethoscope. I don't know what that says about my clinical exam findings, but in a sense of this is an essential tool I find as a clinician to double check my assumptions, to make sure that I can be up to date as a general medicine doc. And so when I went to Rwanda about 2 years ago, I asked UpToDate if I could take a few CDs with me. And I was amazed that my colleagues in Rwanda wanted to stay up till 2-3 in the morning looking things up. They knew the ID section down cold. They could have written that section. But it was the nephrology, the neurology sections, the cardiology sections. And they brought up a host of excellent ideas for new cards for UpToDate. So I brought all their suggestions back and met with the CEO again, and he was absolutely thrilled that it made UpToDate feel like this live document, and they're so wonkish there that if anyone has an answer that's not there, they were thrilled to engage. So now, if anyone applies, we've got an almost 100% rate. They fill out the application, and UpToDate gives a year free subscription. And we hope those of you who are connected to clinical settings around the world, as long as they qualify by UpToDate's criteria for resource-limited settings, we're able to give the subscription. So our next steps for GHGN Lies and Experiment is refining the platform. There's been a huge call to make and integrate it more, not as an e-health platform, but as a mobile health platform and SMS texting, images, leveraging new content. There's a host of actually data sets that we think need to be made available. We're working a bit with Google Maps on some of that, how to map some of the practitioners out there. And then opening new communities to meet user needs. And in many ways, the communities that we've opened, especially the public ones, have been people like you who've said, this is needed, or we had these three or four listeners, but they're, in a sense, isolated. Can you help us connect them? And we're pleased to do that. So I think, in summary, what I tried to do in the last, hopefully it didn't take too long, 10 minutes, was define what we think the implementation gap is, a discussion of knowledge versus information, what are professional virtual communities, and three examples from GHD Online. And our overall hope, and this is beyond GHD Online and some of the other projects we do at the Global Health Delivery Project, but it really is to transform delivery from a scale-up, from small, disconnected efforts into a movement using 21st century technology, standards, and efficiency. Many thanks for your attention. Looking forward to your feedback.
Yes, this is really interesting. One of the things that I wonder about is whether there are other organizations or other groups of people who are engaging in the same or an equivalent kind of effort, mm-hmm. and is this not sort of mushrooming in different places, and mm-hmm. how do you interact with them so that you collaborate rather than compete with one another?
Absolutely. So we've done a landscape analysis of where there are virtual professional communities in other subject areas. And so we actually tend to engage with those folks first to say, if you think the technology that you have is sufficient, you won't enter that space. So the 8 public communities that we launched were spaces we didn't see a virtual professional community. 2 of the communities actually previously had, they were in another space, so they were at Listserv, one was a wiki, and the community members were participating in both, and they asked to actually be taken over. It's kind of a friendly takeover. So the adherence and retention community was a listserv and a Wikipedia, and they merged into our community. But absolutely, that's the last thing we want to do, is if there's something already working, terrific.
And then what about sustainability? Like, what's funded this so far? Mm-hmm. Is this like in the future?
This is a pretty lean machine. This isn't a very expensive operation, but it's in philanthropy, it's 2 anonymous donors. And then I used, in a sense, when I applied for grants and a few others, we actually use this as our dissemination technique. So we say, instead of publishing in the literature, this is where we'd like our data to sit and live. So the Gates Foundation accepted that. And so when I received our grant last year, looking at large-scale HIV prevention programs, in a sense, they don't expect that the data is in the literature. They'd like it to live on GHG Online. So the idea is to actually move some of the funders, that the products shouldn't be, could be white literature, which is great, but this should be an addition.
When you start your discussion threads between your communities and you want the discussion to carry throughout the different continents, are you sensitive to when those threads are out or when those messages are posted to the communities? And then I assume that those conversations live on through the night, and then in the morning you're reading the threads. But do you try to stagger when you send out those messages?
So I don't initiate all the discussions. So any user, anyone can ask the questions, like 24/7 hotline. The second part, I think, is the language question. So, because that does become a barrier. So right now we're working on, if your cookie says you're actually reading Internet Explorer in French or Swahili, you'll see the discussion in that. So we're just testing that right now. So I think time ends up being less of a barrier, but language, the discussions are not being shown in your primary language.
How are you evaluating this, and if so, what are sort of the measures of success that you're evaluating on?
Excellent question. So if anyone wants to evaluate us, love it. we did this as an experiment. So we have a set of metrics that we're actually emailed every morning. Are these new users? How many of the pages are actually being seen? How long people are signing up each of the pages? How long it takes someone once they sign up to actually post? Do we see a surge of activity after a conference? So for example, the tuberculosis conference is happening in Berlin. We tend to see a surge of posting after that. And then we ask ourselves, okay, how should we leverage conferences? How could this be a continuation of that dialogue after a conference? But we would love to be the
value like an extra person. We'll open up all of the huge, we use Mint to track our metrics. Know that it's easy to share with anyone.
Thank you very much, Dr. For the presentation. I'm happy to see the data that you're working with on my mentors. Where in Botswana are you based? Which partnerships are you working with in Botswana?
So this is all virtual, so we're not based anywhere. We have no infrastructure.
So the people that you have contact with in Botswana are just random healthcare workers?
So they're policymakers, they're stakeholders in Botswana, but it's really virology here. So there's no center in Botswana. We haven't gone to each of these countries. 125 countries. Since we do research in a set of these countries, we will talk about GHG-online when we're there. But we found that is less, in the sense that is less effective as a marketing technique versus members telling other members and using it to share this mechanism. We could send the discussions right out to your colleagues.